In this episode of The Supportive, data.
Data. Data? I've been working with the Americans and Europeans for so long, I think I've lost complete track of how Australians normally pronounce it. Also, do I say schedule or schedule? This is all beside the point. I'm just going to say data. In this episode of The Supportive, data, DJs, product managers, hygiene, support. Will they blend? SaaS support teams are absolutely full of good ideas. They talk to customers all day long. They see their confusion, their delight. They listen to their requests and suggestions. They share the pain points. Support teams know and feel what is causing problems for customers and what should be fixed and what should be added to the product. How to make customers happy. So it can be confusing and frustrating when it feels like nobody wants to listen to the support team. When those ideas are shared with the company, but nothing happens, especially when they have to go back to the queue and help even more customers deal with the same old problems. And often there's a specific person or a team who seem to be most responsible for this lack of progress. It's the product managers. They stand right in between support and all the engineers and the designers who could make those changes, like a massive nightclub bouncer, or the one who is surprisingly good at using PowerPoint. And yes, I know that's not a fair characterization of product managers. I mean, some of them have hair. But they're usually the people who are deciding what gets worked on and in what order and when, and therefore, they are the people that support teams need to work with and to convince if they want to get things done. So for this episode, I decided to talk to a product manager to see if we can learn more about how they work and how support might work with them more effectively. Specifically, this product manager. My fellow Australian and former colleague two times over, Mr. Ben Hendo Henderson.
Yeah, g'day. My name's Ben Henderson. I'm the Chief Product and Technology Officer at Fair Supply, an Aussie ESG analytics startup.
I saw recently that you were also doing some DJ work.
Yeah, I say that I've been in product for a long time, but DJing was something that I got into when I was at uni, actually, up your way in Wollongong.
Wollongong. Australia's 10th largest city, just down the coast from Sydney. It's the home of coal mines and steelworks. Izzy from Neighbours. And me. Hashtag love the gong.
Yeah, I think it was at the time a perfect mix of my love of like technology and drinking properly. I was not a very good musician per se. So it was either drums or DJing, I think was then the options for me. And I chose DJing, which was really fun. I probably did that properly for about 10 years as like a side hustle, as it would probably be called these days. Really, really fun. And I think learned a lot of, this isn't like one of those like LinkedIn posts, like 20 things I learned about B2B SaaS from DJing.
Number 7. Make them wait for the drop. Building anticipation for your upcoming products is vital.
But certainly about like running a business and also just brand and reinvention, creativity was a really interesting space to be involved in for a while. I think it definitely fed into like a few of my later career approaches.
And at Help Scout, or Director of Product Management, is that your role?
I think so, yeah. I think that was the title, yeah.
But you were also a product manager at Campaign Monitor, where we both previously worked, where I was the head of support at the time. But first question on product managers is, do you like playing Tetris?
Yes. And as my wife will tell you, one of my favorite pastimes is boot Tetris.
Or trunk Tetris, which is more pleasingly alliterative.
When it comes to packing the car, when you're going on a trip and stuff like that, I really relish that opportunity because it is quite a fun challenge to see just how perfectly you can get everything to fit together without it actually moving around when you're driving. So, yes, I do love Tetris. And yes, I can absolutely see the analogy with product management.
I cannot believe that he spotted my clever analogy before I even pointed it out.
What is the job of a product manager?
You know, to put it in really simple terms, it's really about just understanding the intersection between what customers want and how you can solve that problem with technology. It's kind of like combining those two things together in some way that is effective, unique, solves the problem or the unmet need an effective way. I won't even say new and interesting because I feel like that's like a little bit like overbaked. But like it doesn't have to be exciting. And I think an often actually effective application of technology is actually usually pretty boring. So I think that in essence is like the core of product management. I think what a product manager does is like one of those things that I think varies organization to organization significantly. In essence, I think it's being able to, in somewhat of a creative way, find the intersection between those two things, the problem and the technology solution. A good organization is an organization where everyone kind of owns understanding those problems. I think it's fundamental or critical to being able to kind of market effectively. It's fundamental to being able to build products. It's fundamental to be able to sell them.
So it would make your job easier the more that the rest of the company understood, like, who are our customers and what are they trying to do?
I think it's usually very clear when you're getting like requests, demands, perhaps in some cases, from either sales or like support or CS or whomever it might be. It's like, oh, the customer needs X feature, or like, oh, like they're gonna leave and go to I'll use a Help Scout relevant reference like Zendesk. That's all helpful feedback, but it's not really helpful in the sense that it's not like helping you understand the problem. So like if people have a good way of like kind of digging into that, then it becomes infinitely more easier to do the like product management job, which is complicated at best.
The day-to-day of the job, what are you often doing?
The day-to-day really looks like a lot like gathering the insights. User research is obviously a really important part of product development. It's like largely, a product design activity. But I think the customer understanding piece is something that the product manager should really be owning. And a lot of product managers spend a lot of time going out and talking to directly to customers, which is obviously a very, very helpful and good thing to do. But I think, what I've found to be really effective as well is like, there's lots of people within the organization who do that every day as part of their jobs. One of the things that I would like spend a lot of time doing, generally speaking, not always, but often is try and like, be engaging not just with the customers, but with, support teams, sales teams, marketing teams. So a lot of those conversations are kind of like part and parcel of the day-to-day. Then kind of turning those conversations into something, a summary or an insight, really core to the product manager's job, I think, is actually like producing something from those conversations. I think rather than just like diving straight into, oh, let's build this thing, something I think actually working with Nick Francis, I think was one of the people who was like the best at this at Help Scout is like the product brief and like crafting a really effective summary of the problem to be solved.
A brief at Help Scout is where every product feature starts. It's a document that articulates a specific customer problem, and then it presents a hypothesis about the impact of solving it. And it also includes research and evidence that's been collected about the problem, but it doesn't try to define a specific solution. It's intended to help leaders decide where they should invest the time and the energy of the business.
So, like crafting that brief, which is essentially a summary of what you've heard from support teams and customers, like if you spend 50% of your time doing that, then the product that comes out the end will actually be like exponentially better. And then the rest of the time it's just working with the design and engineering and like all the other teams that are actually like delivering and producing the stuff that you've kind of done all of the thinking on.
Of course, there are plenty of other competing demands on the time of product managers, as Ben went on to say.
I think product managers classically get pulled into a lot of meetings. They're like responsible for a lot of stakeholder management, usually managing up, but also managing out with like get dragged onto customer calls to explain why we don't have this particular feature or, like all of that kind of stuff. I think that's the part of the job that is key to the job, but also like can detract from your ability to do a great job on all of the other stuff as well.
Product managers are always dealing with more demands than they could possibly fulfill, and it must sometimes be tempting to just stop listening. So I asked Ben about that.
My opinion has kind of evolved over time on that, in the sense that I think when you're a bit earlier in your career, actually, like the natural inclination there is to be like, oh, this person doesn't know what they're talking about. You know, they're too like, I'm the product manager. I'm like, I'm in the weeds with the team and talking to customers. But I think actually some of the like the best ideas have come through those channels. Like they may not always be the best articulated, but I think there is an element of like from a product management perspective, like you have to be open to all like inputs. And like that includes the founders or the like executive team or the head of sales or whatever, because like they all do have that different perspective. There's always like a little bit of push-pull. They have like often like a core sense of what customers need. So it's like listening to that and knowing when to push hard back and say, no, I don't think this is the most important, and when to be like, oh no, you know what? They're right. But the real way, if you strongly disagree, like if it falls into that bucket of like, hey, I don't think this should be a priority, like data is the ultimate, I think, deal breaker, deal decider, whatever the right word is there.
Oh, he says data. Is that right? I mean, he's Australian. Am I wrong? I'm sticking with data.
Because a well-reasoned counter-argument with data behind it that's somewhat objective, you know, whether that be qualitative data from customers saying that, you know, this other thing is the most important, or quantitative data showing that, oh, actually this feature isn't getting used at all. Like, why are we going to invest like money into it? Or, you know, and here's the things that the data shows are more important. I think for me, that's always been the most effective way to, where you do want to push back, where you think it's important. Even if you're a more junior PM, I think that most founders, leaders, you know, like all of that kind of stuff will always kind of listen to the data more than they will listen to an opinion.
And so that ties in, I think, with support people. A question that a lot of them will have is, how can I be more effective at getting my point across to the people who are deciding what to build and what not to build?
Often customer teams are in possession of a lot of that data. Often when I'm trying to get data on a particular problem or something, the first people I will go to will be the customer teams. And so if you're in a customer team and you're trying to influence the product roadmap or feel a sense of conviction about a certain idea or thing, leveraging the data that you have to tell that story is like, there's two parts of it. That's the first part. And then I think the second part is framing it up in terms of the problem that you think needs to be solved, for either for the customer or for the business. You want to like focus everyone's attention on the problem to be solved and not have it be more like come across like just like an idea or a feature request.
Now here, Ben's getting at an important distinction, the difference between a problem and a particular solution, because the same problem could be solved in many different ways. And he shared an example of a customer that wanted to integrate an app with another product, but the more he dug into that request, the biggest pain point that he found was really about how the data import worked.
Well, what is the problem that the customers are actually trying to solve? It's like, well, right now they're having to like manually upload their data into like the system. It's like, okay, well, that's not that difficult. It's not that much data. It's like, oh yeah, but actually to do that, they need to be like, to get it into our system, they need to be formatting in a very specific way. And it takes them like actually 4 weeks after they've exported the data to actually get it in. So instead of building a zero integration, maybe the first thing we need to do is actually just make it easier for them to put the data in, how they're getting it out of the system, because that actually might be easier for them than integrating with a whole other platform.
This is a key point for customer support teams to consider. Maybe building a whole integration is just impossible because of the lack of engineering time or knowledge, but tweaking an importer to work with a different format, maybe that would be totally doable by one person who has a spare couple of days. If the product manager doesn't have the data, that understanding of where the pain is actually happening, they're just not going to be able to make that call. And you might not need tons of data either, just enough.
If you can tell me that 50% of our customers have requested this, I mean, that's probably even overcooking. Even just like five qualitative examples of like customers with very clear articulations of that specific problem, like in many ways is enough. That's actually often more data than we have to work with, you know, to make other decisions. Putting it in those terms so that it makes it easier to your point earlier, to do that translation into a product priority, and line it up against all the other things in the backlog. I think that's really key.
But of course, even if you have data up the wazoo and a heart-rending customer story that's presented as an incredible interpretive dance, you still might not get the answer you want.
Often the answer is no, or like maybe not no, but not now. Maybe like going back to your question at the start, core to the product manager's job is essentially the Tetris. It's the prioritization of the things. And so often when you like get a request, 99% of the time it's a not now, because the now roadmap, you know, goes for like 3 months. And like, it's like, well, we can't possibly fit another thing in. But I think for support teams and other teams within the business who like are making those requests, that can be really challenging because it feels like shouting into the void. But it's not really intentional. It's just the way, the reality of forward prioritization and planning, you know, that you're usually planning like a quarter ahead at least if we're doing it properly. And I think the best thing you can do is just keep the drumbeat of feedback around that thing with the data. Don't get disheartened by the fact that your Xero integration didn't get prioritized for the next sprint. It almost never will. But just keep the drumbeat of feedback and data coming through, like, you know, every couple of weeks, be like, oh, hey, here's another three customers. If I'm hearing repeated patterns of feedback and data from customers or from elsewhere that kind of are telling a story in my head, that's going to then, when it does come to the like next wave of prioritization or the planning, the roadmap and things like that, that's going to be front of mind for me. And I'm going to be like, oh, there is something here. There's something in this, because I keep hearing it from different customers and different people. So if it is truly a problem to be solved, then it should keep bubbling up. And it's kind of your responsibility to kind of keep telling that story. What actually happens is, you know, you have like a Jira board or a Trello board or something where, you know, people from within the business can put the feedback or requests, and stuff just keeps getting put in. And then eventually people are like, well, nothing's ever happening with this stuff. And then they stop putting it in. And then like, that's actually like a terrible scenario, because then unless the product manager is explicitly going out and like having those conversations, like the feedback loop is shut.
So don't give up unless you've been told definitively that it's a forever no.
So it is a really important muscle for an organization to build. And there is a responsibility, I think, on product to make sure that people feel heard, even if the answer is like, no, not now. Because otherwise, yeah, that will dry up. And then the PM will be like, oh, don't feel like I'm hearing from customers. I don't know why. But it's like, well, you know, that's why.
We finished up by talking about Hendo's best advice for support teams. How can they be more effective and give their needs a higher chance to be met? Number one was acting like a toddler. Just keep asking why.
The most consistent and effective tool that I've seen anyone use, regardless of their role, is the five whys. That's the quickest way to consistently get to a deeper understanding of the problem. Ask the next question, you know, like, oh, but why is that a problem? Like, what are you trying to achieve? Oh, why is it so hard? Like, oh, why are you doing this in the first place? Ask why and keep asking why until you feel like you really understand the problem. And then that's what you're trying to like capture.
He had a couple of other suggestions too.
Yeah, I think having like someone who's accountable within the success or the support teams for that relationship, and can also be the person that the product manager or managers know to go to when they have questions. That's really key. And then I think quite practically on the data side, it's like just having good data hygiene more than anything, as much as possible. A small number of tags or kind of segments of feedback to put stuff in, so that it's anytime the product manager is looking for insights, like they can actually go and self-serve as well and just like understand. So I think like that kind of data hygiene, for want of a better term, is really important for support and success teams. Maybe the last piece is don't be afraid to throw stuff away. Backlogs build out over time, and it's easy just to keep stuff there just in case you need it. It's like the anti-Marie Kondo effect. But actually, there's a reason why she was so popular and that whole thing was popular. It's one of the best things like both product and support teams can do is actually clean the house regularly, so that you don't have all this noise sitting around. Yeah, sure. Okay, we've had 100 requests for Xero integration, but that's over the last 5 years. And actually in the last 6 months, we've only had one customer who's said something about that. I think that's probably the most effective way of keeping good data hygiene is not being afraid to clean the house and get rid of the stuff you don't love anymore.
They say thank you for your service, backlog item, but now it's time for you to leave.
That's right. Yeah. And start fresh. And I mean, it's a good feeling for everyone, but I think it's actually really effective at helping everyone understand what are really the most important things like for our customers now, because customers change.
customers do change. And also, as a company, your ideal customer profile will change over time. And this is an area where a lot of support teams struggle. You get so used to helping your long-term customers and meeting their needs, sometimes you have to face the reality that you will need to build a product that appeals to people who aren't already your customers. And your product might be moving away from the people that it first attracted.
I think one of the key aspects of product management that we didn't really talk about is like setting the vision and like the product strategy, more so in terms of being really, really clear on where we're going. Because I think that then really helps kind of prioritization when it comes to like the problems today. If you don't have a clear view of like where you're going from a product perspective and who those customers are that you're working towards, then it's easy to just say, oh yeah, cool, like this customer, blah, this, blah, 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 you know, like, so I think like that's the other piece, is just like really having a strong vision for the product and the and strategy that includes like who that ideal customer is, or what is the core problems it's trying to solve. And then every decision, everything, all the Tetris, you know, really should be focused on that. I think the communication of the vision and the strategy, if everyone in the company knows what that is and they know what problems we're trying to solve, I guess like taking it right back to the start of this conversation, then that should be a much easier conversation, because salespeople or, you know, marketing or success or support should know, okay, like I hear you, but, and they can kind of guide the customer or the prospect or whatever in the right direction. So if everyone's really clear on that, then it makes all of those conversations a lot easier.
Huge thanks to Ben Henderson for taking time out of his day to talk to me. The key points I got from this chat with Ben were: back up your request with data, and you might not need as much of that as you think. Be data hygienic. Keep your tagging simple. Make it self-service for product teams to use. Use the 5 whys as a simple way to develop those customer insights. Have a go-to person for your product manager to talk to on the support team. Make sure you understand your product vision and the company's strategy so you can try to align your request to those things. Keep up to date on the ideal customer profile that you're supposed to be helping. And finally, don't forget the life-changing magic of cleaning up your request backlog. That's it for this episode of The Supportive. Thank you so much for listening. If you've got any comments or questions or suggestions, email thesupportive@helpscout.com. That'll come right to me. And if you like what you hear, please do take a moment to rate and review us or to share the show with a colleague. See you next time. According to my analytics, most of you listening now are not Australian. So while I had Ben Henderson on hand, I thought it was a good chance to do some real cultural exchange. And I started by asking him which Aussie phrase he liked to use the most.
No wuckers is probably the clear favourite. No wuckers in essence means no worries.
Here's how it works. No f- worries becomes no wuckin' furries becomes no wuckers. We are a rich and complex culture.
Like no worries in general, I think, is always a good philosophy for Aussies, especially when you're like working in industries like tech or places like that, which can get a little bit serious.
Now, here's an Aussie slang challenge that I presented to Hendo, but that you might want to have a go at too. Here it comes. Listen up. So I was chucking a Yui in my ute so I can get to the servo, because I've got to get me rego check before I hit up the Nasho. What do you think it means? Press pause now. Email me your best guess to thesupportive@helpscout.com before you listen to the answer. I would love to know what you thought.
Yeah. So chucking a Yui would be making a, 180 degree turn on the road? 180? Yes,
yeah, that's right.
Yeah, a U-turn. Yeah, a U-turn. Chucking a Yui in a ute, I think you said, which is an Australian kind of vehicle, a utility vehicle, or a flatbed truck, as I think they would call it in the US, to the servo. Servo being service station. I think that's a very helpful contraction of the two words. So rego check is an easy one. So I'm gonna go get my registration on my said vehicle checked. The Nasho, I'm not sure that I
might be too local for you.
Yeah.
You would have been close when you were in Wollongong, but the national park
Oh, of course. Yeah. I know my best guess was like a pub that who's like local reputation I wasn't aware of. But yeah, the national park also, it makes perfect sense. But thanks for that. That was really fun.